John Hansen in for Matt Bubala here on this Saturday morning, this chilly one, bone chilly out there. Hopefully things are going to warm up a little bit today before we get some snowfall. Roger will have all those details coming up in just a little bit. I'm going to call him on early, so I hope he's ready for us. We got Blake Stubbs joining us. Blake Stubbs, a movie critic, joins anytime I fill in and joins obviously with Dane Neal. Blake Stubbs, how you doing, my friend?
Hello, good morning. I'm doing quite well. I'm wide awake at 2:24 in the morning. That's a bit of an achievement for me.
Yeah.
At least at this time, of year, and you know, especially on a Saturday morning.
Well, yeah, so. And you've got things going on because Blake and I are former speech team people. If you don't know what speech team is, it's a competitive forensics event and dramatic and humorous events and radio speaking extemp. And you're judging a regional event down Central Illinois today, right, Blake?
I am. This is the first of, you know, a 3-week state series of tournaments that goes on every year. And then I believe it culminates in Peoria, Illinois, in 3 weeks time. But that first week is sort of the testing grounds. We got to see what teams have put together. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking forward to judging. It'll be my first time this year. I usually do it a couple times a year, but I'm sort of walking right into the lion's den this time.
Yeah, walking right into
regionals. That makes three of us.
Wait, are you judging regionals, Roger?
Well, I used to judge, and I used to compete.
Oh, you were a speech teamer.
Yes.
What events did you do, Roger?
I only did one. What do you think?
Radio speaking.
Thank you.
How'd you do?
My senior year, the first round of sectionals?
Regionals. Well, maybe it used to just be sectional back in your day.
There were three of them.
Regional, sectional, state.
Okay, so I did regionals. I won in that.
Yeah.
And I went on to sectionals, and I got cocky.
Oh.
And, you know, there's five rounds.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
right?
Yeah. It's,
you know,
intense.
3 in the morning, 2 in the afternoon. And I got really like, hey, I got this wrapped up, you know? And I blew my times. I blew my pacing. I blew the words.
Uh-huh.
I blew. Because you got to prepare them there. You can't prepare, right?
For those of you who don't know, radio speaking, you get a packet of news, and you have 45 minutes to literally, with scissors and tape, cut and paste a newscast together. And Roger, as I can tell, that experience really haunted you, and you never went anywhere in your career after
that. No, I gave it up right there, and I went into insurance.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I did radio speaking as well, Roger, but I got second in state. So sorry, Roger. I advanced a little bit further than you did.
I feel so inferior.
I still remember the name of the person who beat me, though, Ryan Swearingen, and he's a urologist now. So who's doing better in radio, Ryan?
Hey,
Blake Stubbs was fifth in state in impromptu speaking, Blake?
I was an impromptu speaker and an extemporaneous speaker. And then I actually coached radio for 4 years as part of a team, my old high school's team. We all got our roots, man, and I think it's just a natural thing that we kind of came to radio.
I was at Evanston.
Oh yeah, that's
and,
right.
And I coached there for a while back in after I got out of college, I went back there for a little time, just hung out there and was coaching a little bit. And then I came back when I became a teacher.
And
I coached there 96 through 2000.
Wonderful. I still coach at Downers Grove South, actually.
Well, look at you.
16-time state champion, Downers Grove South, and including last year.
You know, I'm just going to go in the other room. Have fun.
Well, Roger, you got about 3 minutes to
join you guys. I'll see you later.
So, Blake, we're gonna get to news in about 2 or 3 minutes. So, we're just gonna start our conversation here. Obviously, yesterday was Groundhog's Day, and I mean, it is a cult classic, of course. The Harold Ramis, Bill Murray, Groundhog's Day, a movie that is played over and over, of course, on Groundhog's Day. And really, I was reading a little bit about it. It wasn't necessarily the most popular movie when it came out. It really is kind of gained this cult classic status.
It is. It's one of those movies, I think, that has that slow burn, has picked up steam, you know, in its post-theatrical release life. I wouldn't say it's one of those movies from Harold Ramis and Bill Murray, one of those movies that gets, you know, quoted as often. But when it does, it clicks with, you know, the people who see it, remember it, and know it. And for one of those reasons, like, Groundhog Day is one of those movies that you can watch anytime. It has one of Bill Murray's best performances, I think, that just runs, you know, the whole table as far as, like, what you want out of an actor. And at the same time, like, it's kind of a fascinating film to read about the production of. It actually led to sort of the dissolution of the friendship between Harold Ramis and Bill Murray, that they were able to bury the hatchet before Ramis's untimely passing. But at the same time, I think it brought out the best in both. And at the same time, picked up its steam and found its life. And it's now one of those primary, you know, key comedies that people want to go to and quote and watch. And, you know, I mean, the fact it centers around a certain holiday, I think also, you know, gives it that life every year, even if it's one of those that you just don't necessarily want to watch it. When the day hits, you're like, oh, I'm going to watch Groundhog Day today. And now it has life on Broadway as a musical as well, which it's done quite well on its stage run.
Do you think that the movie stands up? I mean, have you watched it recently enough? And because, you know, comedies, it's so hard. I mean, I think dramas and actions and those sorts of movies stand up over time just because of their nature. But, you know, the senses of humor's change, and over time, certain comedies lose that luster or regain it, depending on the year it was, or depends on how old you were and the time that the movie was released. Have you seen it recently enough, and do you feel like the Groundhog's Day really does stand up to the test of time?
I have, and I will just be very honest. I actually watched it last night after I got off work. So, it was one of those things where I was like, you know what? I haven't actually sat and watched Groundhog's Day in a few years. I think I'm going to do it. So I went ahead, and I was like, well, Corey, I'm glad we're going to talk about it on the radio. But coming into this, like, thinking about the comedy in that film, I think it's all very slice-of-life type comedy. Now, obviously, like, you know, there's a lot of intricacies in the premise and the plot device of this whole, like, living this day over and over again. But a lot of the material in the movie doesn't date itself too well. I mean, yes, it takes place before everybody had cell phones, and yes, social media doesn't really factor into it. But all of the key essentials that you need to relive a day over and over again and try to experience it differently and better yourself throughout each and every time you do it, I think that it still resonates. I don't think that it's the type of comedy that is, like, you know, encapsulated in its time and we can't really go back. Now, you know, in the social climate that we live in today, I'm sure there are, and I can think of a few things that, you know, might be viewed as problematic, but at the time, like, they weren't, and they're kind of stuck in that time. Mm-hmm. But at the same note, I think that all of the comedy, you know, being people being people, for better or worse, I think it still plays. Yeah. And I think it plays to even a younger-ish audiences that might experience the film for the first time today.
Blake, we got to take a break. I'd love to continue the Groundhog Day talk just because it is a love story in itself. And we're going to talk about love stories. So you got some queued up for us, right? You'll be ready after the other side of the news?
Oh, absolutely. All right, ready to go.
Rick Stubbs is going to stay on the line. So 312-91-7200. I'd love for you to get in your favorite movie love stories. It's a month of love, whether you like it or not. Valentine's Day just around the corner. Many Roger Badish celebrations in the household. Tell us what your favorite love story is in the movies. Give us a call or send us a text at 312-981-7200. Okay, we're a little late for news. It's 2:32, so we go up to the newsroom, and here's Roger Badish. WGN 2:36 on this Saturday morning. Roger, that's how happy we were about the snow that's coming.
Yeah,
that
know.
We had to bump on in with that music
yeah,
a little
bit. You got
earlier.
Your skis?
No, actually, I'm going to be skiing a little bit for the jam for WCIU.
Oh, really?
With the Winter Games coming up.
Well, that's right. Yeah,
many of the days on the morning show, I'm going to be trying to replicate some of the events. So I've got curling set up. I'm going to do some curling in a little bit. I've got some skiing. I'm trying to actually find former Olympians to race against in all these things or to compete against, because I feel like there's no better way to show off how impressive these athletes are than to have me go against them. I raced an Olympic swimmer once, a former Olympic swimmer, for not even for the United States. He was for one of the Eastern European countries. He's from the United States.
Uh-huh.
Great guy. We were at a pool, and we raced, and he gave me, so we did just two laps, like we're back and forth, right?
Okay.
Freestyle.
Right, right.
And we did, he gave me a head start of an entire lap, so I went all the way down before he started, right?
Okay.
I then got out of the pool and ran back. And he, Roger, he still beat me.
No!
Yes! It is insane. And this guy is now in his late 30s.
Oh,
so he hasn't actually been an Olympic swimmer. I think he was in the 00 games or the 04 games, maybe. And it was just insane. that he gave me a lap head start to swim. He didn't start swimming until I got out of the pool to run back, and he still beat me. Well, now, I mean, I'm not the most athletic guy in the world. I'm not the best swimmer in the world, and I'm not the best runner in the world, but that's insane.
Yeah, and you're lucky I wasn't there as the lifeguard.
Yeah, I would have.
I would have stopped you as you got out of the pool and started to run.
Yeah,
because young man, there is no running.
I don't think
around the pool.
I don't think the pool staff was too happy I was doing that. That's why I didn't tell him beforehand that I was doing that.
I want you to go on the ski jump.
Yeah, I'm gonna. Oh my god, I don't think I'd do that. I think I'm just gonna mogul or something like that. But
okay,
we can hold this for the 3 o'clock discussion because we got Blake Stubbs joining us here. Blake, I bet you're of no surprise that I was beaten in the swimming pool by an Olympic swimmer.
Not even remotely. I've seen you swim and I've seen you run.
It's something.
It's a sight to behold. If we want to bring a little Howard Cosell into it, but yeah, no, I'm not surprised at all. But at the same time, I appreciate your effort out there, John.
Mm-hmm.
I really do.
All right, so we're talking. It's February. We're going to be talking about love all month long. Love is in the air. Valentine's Day. All that crud. And the movies are. This is the time of year really to cozy up and watch a love movie with your special boo or. Watch a love movie with a glass of whiskey and cry about it or something. But Blake, I mean, to try and narrow down love in movies is kind of an insane perspective because, I mean, a lot of movies are obviously centered around a couple or centered around the idea of love. It's so involved in our everyday lives as well. So when I asked you to start doing this task, did you just start like just running through a ton of movies and just starting kind of clicking some off the box? Did you try and pick a few different types of love stories? Where did you even start with this process?
Every time I come on WGN, what I try to do is when it comes to making up a big list, I can make a list that's 50 movies long. But in the end, what I try to do is pick something that represents a different type of, I guess, subgenre, but still keeping that theme, you know, like love or romance being a big part of this in some way, in any one of the movies that I'm listing. But yet all of them have their own unique element or trait. Some, you know, might have won Best Picture, but at the same time, some of them just have cult followings. At the same time, some are animated, you know, some are live action, some are comedies, some are dramas.
Mm-hmm.
Some are epic and some are very small and isolated. Some are kind of cheesy. I think that it's important that, you know, when you ask either me or any audience member out there right now, like if you say, what's your favorite? Like everyone's favorite is always going to have a personal attachment to it, be it because of a relationship they might be in or have been in, or it's just a movie they saw when they were younger and it's always stayed with them because it played on TV all the time or, you know, family member introduced them to it and they were like, oh, this is a good movie. And now as they're older, they're like, wow, there's so much in this, you know, that I never thought of when I was younger watching it. So yeah, I start big and I just try to, like, you know, whittle away at it to make it sort of like a clutch list of, if you're looking for something to watch, these are a few things I might recommend. And I know that, you know, people are going to throw stuff at us. So at the same time, I'm like, you know, whatever list I put together, they're probably going to have some really great contributions that I would have never even thought of.
Certainly. 312-981-7200. Like, you know, get in your requests right now or your requests. Get in your picks for your best love movie. Blake will act out the whole movie for you. No. And I know we got some phone calls coming in already, but Blake, why don't you go ahead and start us off with one of your favorites.
Well, one of my favorites, I want to start, you know, in the sort of animated category, because I was like, you know, the animated films have touched, you know, different generations of people, and they stick with people much easier because typically you see them when you're younger. But for me, I saw this when I was in college, and it has stuck with me. I think it is a masterpiece. It's a Pixar film, and I know a lot of people are going to say, oh, it's Up. Well, Up goes hand in hand with this film as two of the best movies about love. But for me, it's WALL-E.
Ah.
You know, WALL-E is story of the small robot who is isolated and alone and has the cricket, I believe it was, as his friend. But then when he meets a counterpart, another robot, he falls in love with her and he'll do anything he can to protect her, save her, or be there for her. And I think that it was just such a charming film. I think that it was one of those movies that visually really built a world that audiences places could go to in their minds. And at the same time, he doesn't really say much, and neither does she, but they're able to communicate and be so much more just by being around each other than if they were just being robots tasked with a simple job.
Man, I'm pretty impressed. I'm pretty impressed, Blake. You're starting out with a movie about robots for love stories, but that is
exactly
that definitely tugs on the heartstrings. Hey, we got a phone call from Jim. Jim, you're in the South Loop. Jim, do you have a favorite relationship movie or two to share with us?
Yes, Love's a Many Splendored Thing with Jennifer Jones and Bill Holden, and Farewell to Arms with Rock Hudson and Jennifer Jones.
Oh, Blake Stubbs, two classics there.
I was going to say, Jennifer Jones had some hits when it comes to this type of thing. Those are very good picks. And I definitely think, especially with, you know, those leading men, you know, big Hollywood icons. And at the same time, like back then, those were the types of movies people loved to go see in theaters.
Jim, what was your favorite part about those movies in particular? Why do those stand out to you?
Well, the love of Jennifer Jones she had for Bill Holden. And what Rock Hudson did to get to Jennifer Jones when he was captured by the Italian army for desertion.
Mm-hmm.
It was great love, and how he loved her, and when she was dying, how he was emotionally affected by it. Because I lost my wife, and it just reminded me so much of that.
Yeah, Jim, and I'm sorry to hear about your wife, and I think that is what Blake's getting at, and thanks for the call, Jim. Blake, what Jim was saying is, you know, he lost his wife, and when those movies, we develop these personal connections with them.
Right, and I mean, in the case of Jim, you know, very sorry to hear about the loss of his wife. I'm not saying it's because of tragedy that he thinks of these films. You know, he had a whole life with her, and it's that personal attachment. And if I want to speak about the actress that he mentioned that connects both of those films, Jennifer Jones, to me, she always struck me as one who had great chemistry on camera with her counterparts. And so it was very easily relatable for audiences to connect with those films. And I think that, you know, like I said, great mentions, and definitely the type of films that if you haven't seen them and, you know, you're sort of exploring your taste in cinema, these are two very good ones. Farewell to Arms specifically, I think, that you might want to check out and try to watch soon, especially, you know, in this month of, you know, with Valentine's Day and everything. If you want something different, something new you haven't seen, definitely want to commend Jim for recommending both of those films.
Blake, we're going to squeeze one more in before the break because the 219 texted in. I know this one's on your list. It's the one that you told me. And 219 says Brokeback Mountain, a great love story.
Brokeback Mountain. It was a film that also came out when I was at university, and I remember seeing it in Champaign, Illinois, and thinking, this film is going to win Best Cinematography, and this film is probably going to win Best Picture, because it is telling a story that we are just, you know, it's an independent, it was sort of an art house, like much smaller style film, but it got the audience that it needed to get, and it told a story that we had not really been seeing on camera. And I think that it was unapologetic. I think it was heart-wrenching. I think it was performance driven. It was beautifully directed. The locations were outstanding. Everything clicked for that movie. And the fact that, you know, especially with another film about, you know, two men falling in love with Call Me By Your Name being nominated for the Oscars this year, I've been hearing a little bit more talk about Brokeback Mountain and what that film meant, especially today, you know, in this day and age, which I appreciate because that film's now about 13 years old.
Which is crazy to me. Yeah, that came out in 2005. So I remember when that came out. And this is interesting. That movie came out before I came out, and a couple of years beforehand. You knew me back then. And
I
remember seeing that movie as a closeted gay guy and just being like, I cannot believe I'm actually watching this. And I think, you know, there have been gay themed movies, of course, and Will and Grace have been on TV long before this. It wasn't the first gay love story ever told in cinema, but I think it was the first one that really, like you said, Blake, was so unapologetic. It showed scenes that no other movie really had dared to show, and it was so heartbreaking. But
correct.
In many ways, it was wildly traditional in its love story in a sort of way. You know, there was something just very, just like you'd see between a man and a woman. And I think that made it just feel so everyday and normal in a way. Something that, whether you're straight, whether you're gay, no matter what, you could relate to what was going on in Brokeback Mountain.
Exactly. At the end of like the screening, I remember walking out and saying, I don't care what anybody has to say about this, love it or hate it. In the end, that was a love story. And I think that they told that story so effectively that to have been a smaller film in terms of scale, in terms of money backing it, in terms of, you know, a lot of things that can go against a movie of its kind. Everything just went so well for it. And I'm glad that it was, you know, recognized. I'm glad that it's still talked about, especially today. And again, like I can still vividly remember images, you know, coming to mind from that film and saying, you know what, that's one of the most beautifully shot films I've seen in easily the last 10 years. Now we're beyond its 10-year birthday. Yeah. But I just remember saying, like, that's going to win best cinematography. And little truth. That was back when I was a radio journalist in college and I had free access to a theater here. I could just go and see screenings whenever I wanted to. It was the greatest thing ever. But they actually, that night, they wanted people to come see it. So they said, bring any of your friends that you want. And 8 people showed up. We were all congregated together for like a private screening. And by the end of it, the conversation, you know, that was a buzz at the end of the film, you knew you had seen something special.
Right.
So yes. Brokeback Mountain is definitely very high on the list of greatest love stories in cinema, in my opinion. And I'm glad that we got to talk about it tonight, especially because I feel like not a lot of people do. I don't want a movie like that to be forgotten.
Yeah. And, you know, people forget how quickly things have moved for the LGBT movement. 2005 doesn't sound like that long ago. But yeah, 13 years, things were way different even 13 years ago for the LGBT movement. And it really was, looking back, a real brave film to make, and especially to get 2 actors in there who were widely respected and loved across Hollywood. Yes. to do that movie, and it wasn't just 2 unnamed people. These were 2 big names doing this movie. I don't know. It was wonderful. All right, Blake, we got to take a quick commercial break, okay?
Yep, sounds great.
All right, you'll stick around with us. More love stories. Please send us your love stories, 312-981-7200. Your love stories are your favorite love stories in the movies. More coming up on 720 WGN. WGN. John Hansen filling in for Matt Bubala on this Saturday morning, 2:52, and we got Blake Stubbs on the line. And Blake is a movie critic who we often chat with, and it's the month of love it or hate it. It's February, so everyone's in love for Valentine's Day, or they hate it and they can't wait to talk about how much they hate Valentine's Day. Everyone's got a very strong opinion on it one way or the other. And Blake Stubbs and I were talking about love movies, the best love movies of all time, or the best love relationships that you see in movies of many different genres. We've gotten 2 out and they've been, I guess you can call them non-traditional. I think a lot of people gravitate towards rom-coms, Blake, but we've gotten a love between robots and cowboys to start off.
Yeah. I told you, I try to narrow it down. I try to show love for all subgenres. I don't think when you said, you know, best love movies, you know, best love stories, cinematic love stories, I was like, well, I can't just go with the obvious ones. But, you know, some of the obvious ones have to be brought up.
Yeah,
I think
for
that's
sure.
Important.
Well, Jess is an obvious one. So, Jess, really quickly, what's your favorite love story, by the way?
The Notebook.
Okay.
So precious.
I've actually never seen The Notebook.
What?
I know.
I have.
What do you think, Blake?
We can jam. You know what? I got to be honest with you. I'm not the biggest. I believe Nicholas Sparks. That's the universe that we're speaking in. Am I right, Jess? That's the world, the author, the guy that created the mythos of, you know, books that have turned into films. Am I correct on that?
Yeah, I think he's actually coming out with a new one in theaters.
Ooh.
Might have just released, actually.
Is it called The Trapper Keeper? Or, like, what have we upgraded in terms of... Right? Anyways, bad joke. Keep going, Blake. Save me.
So with The Notebook, I mean, I'm not going to ever knock people who love The Notebook. I'm not going to knock the film. I remember seeing it in theaters. I remember being, you know, hopelessly single at the time because it came out many years ago. But at the same time, I liked the people in it. This is Ryan Gosling. This is Rachel McAdams. They have some visuals in that film that really stick with the audiences, like the kiss in the rain and the argument, you know, that those two have. There's some comedy within that, too. I think it's one of those romantic films that has a little bit of everything in it, but at the same time, it feels like a more traditional love story that, you know, it's evolved over time. Hey, you know, they didn't just get together and that was it. It developed over time throughout these two characters' lives.
Blake, we have some breaking news. Jess just told me something in my ear. Jess, can you tell this to all the listeners right now?
I think that John looks a little bit like Ryan Gosling.
That is the biggest compliment I've ever received in my life, and I cannot say BS more than ever in my life. Blake Stubbs, who you know me well, I don't think I resemble Ryan Gosling in the slightest, but I'll take it, Jess.
It's got to be the beard.
I was going to say, I'll give you a little bit of that Notebook Ryan Gosling, especially when he grows his hair out, but I'm not going to go with Drive Ryan Gosling or Blade Runner Ryan Gosling. I want to make sure people know they're Gosling and keep them separated.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that's, I could see it. I don't want to inflate his ego a little too much, but.
Go to WGNRadio.com, watch the live stream and tell you what to say. Oh, she just now says it's the dreamy eyes. Yeah, okay, I'm wearing my glasses today too, half awake. All right, in for Matt Bobalo. We got a couple texts more coming in, Blake, and we'll continue to get your picks. 312 says, "An Affair to Remember makes me cry every time. I love it." And I believe we're going back to 1957 for that one. "An Affair to Remember." Blake, have you seen that before?
I remember seeing that ages ago. I might have been on like AMC or Turner Classic Movies or something along those lines. But it's one of those that I saw it. It's Cary Grant. Yeah. So I'm pulling it up because I don't want to say anything incorrect. But yes, 1957, Cary Grant. Yes, I remember this movie, but I don't remember it more vividly than, say, something like a couple that are on my list. And I'll give you one of them right now. What I think is one of the all time greats, Casablanca.
Oh, yeah.
Casablanca. It's one of those that it kind of rips at the heartstrings. But you know that, you know, love isn't always fair and love isn't always just this giving thing. Like sometimes it can be a life changing ordeal, for better or worse. And I think Casablanca really highlights that. There's a lot of, you know, Second World War, Nazis on the rise. You've got Americans and you've got, you know, foreign nationals. Everything's culminating at once. It's a real powder keg scenario. But it's also just one of those beautifully told stories. And Affair to Remember falls into that category, too. Back when they were making these classic love stories, and I would call them classics because, you know, classic Hollywood, that's the era coming from. I think that they had a real hook, much like right now, the hook is for the audience is on these superhero, you know, Marvel Universe type scenarios or Star Wars. You know, everything's a franchise now. That's the argument. Back then, it was trying to put butts in the seats to see these films that showed, you know, the best side of humans, which is when they're truly in love with each other. And in some cases, it was because it was a great thing to just go to a movie theater and go someplace else for a while. You know, and not have to deal with the daily grind or the thing that ails you. And they've always found the right people, you know, and they were gorgeous people. But they always found the people to be on camera and tell these stories.
You mentioned that love isn't always fair in Casablanca and that sort of thing. And that's the sort of love movies I sort of gravitate towards. The ones where they end up together in the end and all peachy always drive me crazy. And while that happens in real life, I'm sure many of our listeners Roger happily married for 42 years. There's lots of love out there and love lasts. There's plenty of other stories of heartbreak and your first love isn't your lasting love. And I know this is so recent and it's almost cliche to go to, but this is what I loved about La La Land. Not only was it a great movie with the great music, but it was that moment that the two main characters, and spoiler alert on La La Land, can I spoil alert on this? Is that okay? Spoiler alert on La La Land. They don't end up together, and there's this beautiful moment where she's with her new husband later on, and she goes and she sees her old love performing, and there's this moment where they look at each other, and they realize that they had this love. They don't have it anymore. She's happy. He's happy. Everyone's moved on with their lives. Maybe we are all don't have that one person we're meant to be with. Maybe just like life, it's complicated. You can love one person and then move on and fall in love and still have a very happy life. Like, that's what I loved about it. She was still happy in her new life, but obviously had still some feelings and they shared a moment and then that was it. I don't know. Like, I loved that ending of La La Land.
I think that's what La La Land and Casablanca share, and for me, it's always been this very simple point. They may not be together, but the love that they had defines a big portion of who they are and who they've become and the happiness that they've found. And I think that in La La Land, it's much more apparent. You know, each one sort of branches off after the relationship ends, and they find the thing that they've been looking for. They're able to become what they were always meant to be. But if they hadn't met, if they hadn't crossed paths, if they hadn't had that relationship, would they have been more of the same? when mm-hmm. things have worked out.
Yeah.
And I think that the film, because it's a musical, I think, you know, like a true musical, like I think it really does say that that love is a defining characteristic of who they are as people. So, yeah, I totally agree with you. And I think that, you know, Casablanca has a lot of other different, you know, elements to it
right.
going on. But at the same time, it's a matter of like, look, if you don't get on that plane, you're going to regret it every day for the rest of your life. And, you know, we had our time and it was amazing and I'll never forget it, but you got to go. And that's, you know what I mean? And it's heart-wrenching for anyone who has had to give up something that meant so much to them, but they know that if they don't, it's going to lead to problems. And it's not going to be, you know, that lightning in a jar that it once was.
Blake, you're hitting you're hitting me in all the feels right now, and I think you know why, but we got to take a quick break for the news. We got some more texts coming in. Please keep on coming. 312-981-7200. We'd love to hear from you on the phone as well. We're going to be chatting with Blake Stubbs in the next hour as well about the best love stories of all time, whether they end up together at the end and that's why you cry and love it, or whether they don't end up, whether they're separated and they never get together. Let's all wrench our hearts out here on morning radio here, very early morning radio, but it is 3 o'clock. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNradio.com. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. It's 3 o'clock. We go to the newsroom with Roger Badish.
It's been said and done. Every beautiful thought's been already sung. And I guess right now, here's another one. So you
720 WGN, John Hanson filling in for Matt Bubala. And when I think of Blake Stubbs, who's joining us to talk about love movies, I think of Selena Gomez, of course. So, Blake, that one was for you, buddy.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
We're talking love movies here. I'm filling in until 5 o'clock, and it's February, which, of course, means it's the month of love, love it or hate it. And we're talking about our favorite, either the love, it's a favorite movie that features love as its main theme, or just a certain relationship in a movie that where there's love involved, love lost, maybe, and that exemplifies. And send us text 312-981-7200, or give us a call 312-981-7200. Blake's got some more on his list as well. We're going to be getting to. I always love when callers or texters can give Blake some homework so that he is the movie that he hasn't seen. And Blake, I know you love that when you get that from the listeners.
I do, because I mean, at the same time, like, I watch a lot of stuff, okay, and oftentimes it's usually something someone recommends, and I try to keep my ear, you know, close to the pulse of what's coming out or what's new or what I should see. But every now and again, someone will throw me a curveball and it's like, wait a minute, I have never seen that,
right?
Or I've never heard of it.
Right.
And I love that.
So the next, yeah.
I can't see it all, but I would love to.
Yeah, exactly. 815 texts in. The movie The Professional, starring a young Natalie Portman, was a great love story that this hard stone cold killer was changed by a little girl. Interesting. I never heard of that one.
Yes, Leon is another name the film goes by. It was the film that really put director Luc Besson on the map in the United States. Nikita, La Femme Nikita, was his creation as well. But that movie stars Jean Reno, Natalie Portman. She was about 12 years old. And then as well as a really great performance by Gary Oldman, who was nominated for an Oscar this year for Best Acting. It's about a hitman who sort of crosses paths with this young girl whose family has been murdered, killed, and he takes her in, and he takes care of her, and she takes care of him. I'm not trying to make it sound shady. What mm-hmm. I'm saying is he's very isolated and he doesn't interact with people, whereas she is a young girl who loves to interact with people, and at the same time he wants to protect her. So there is a love story there. It's quite familial in its essence. There have been occasional, you know, like, I've got a little bit of a weird eye to look at this. But when I saw it, I only remember, I was younger, but I remember seeing it as the type of film where it was this guy who was just wandering through life and he was killing people for a living. Bad people, mind you. Mm-hmm. But he was killing people for a living, and this young girl needed help, and he found purpose in what he did.
Interesting.
And it is There is a love story there that I think that's a good pick. That's a good pick for a lot of reasons. It's a very well-made film. It's beautifully acted. It is an action film, but it doesn't come off like, say, Avengers. When I say action film, I don't want people to go down this route of it being like, oh, it's popcorny. It's not. It's a very 90s film, and I think it's one worth picking up. But Leon or The Professional or Leon the Professional, you can find it any which way of those three names.
630 yeah, texts in with Once, a 2006 film about a vacuum repairman moonlighting as a street musician. I can already hear you loving this one, Blake.
Yep. I can, because this did win best, this won an Oscar, I believe, for best foreign film because it came out of Ireland. But it also has had a very successful life as a Broadway musical. And it is full of great music. It's about two people who cross paths. You know, I don't like using the term star-crossed in that case, because I think that they were just bound to meet. And it was just going to happen. And the relationship that forms from that, I think, is a very pure relationship. I think it is beautifully told, both in film and on stage. I've seen it live as well. And, yeah, that's one of those more modern love stories that I think is... It's got Irish storytelling roots, so there's a lot of richness in the characters and the evolving relationship that is. But at the same time... there's songs that you'll sing whether you see the film or the stage play, they'll stick with you. So yeah, Once is definitely one that I don't like to leave off the table.
312
wasn't on my list tonight, but I'm glad somebody threw that in.
312-981-7200. We got a lot of texts coming in, Blake. Bridges of Madison County. I chuckle only because it's one of those classic ones that when I was a kid, I remember that movie was highly promoted, and my parents loved that one.
Yeah, no, Clint Eastwood, Meryl Streep, that's a very big one. That one almost falls in the category of, for our generation, John, I'd say it's one of the sleepers.
Yeah.
It's like it missed us because we were just too young. But, and it does, it's not a comedy. You know, it's not a romantic comedy. It's not, so to find that as an adult, I think, and watch it, you'll give it the due that it deserves. Also a film that has gone on to have a very successful run on Broadway as a musical. That I'm glad, it's funny, I think Broadway's on to something. I think they figured out that they can take these love stories, translate them to the stage, and they can very easily connect with live audiences as well. And Bridges of Madison County, very much so. Especially, I remember that being one of the first films that, as I was growing up, and I won't begin to go into movies like Sophie's Choice, but Meryl Streep was on my radar because of that film at a young age. So, you know, to know that there's two big titans of the movie industry on screen and they're telling a love story that otherwise I don't know that they would have worked together is interesting. And I think it's a beautiful film that people should watch.
262 has one. Blake, I don't know if you're going to have seen this one. Then we're going back to 1945, okay?
Okay.
The Enchanted Cottage. Robert Young, Dorothy McGuire.
I'll admit it. I have not seen it, and that is now my homework. Yeah. Walking away from this interview, The Enchanted Cottage. I'm writing it down right now.
Mm-hmm. All right.
I mean the cast alone intrigues me. The fact it's from 45 tells me a great deal that I'm probably going to enjoy it. I'm one of those guys that all my favorite films came out before 1979. So anytime someone recommends something that I haven't seen, I'm always going to make a big push for it. So thank you.
All right. We've got a lot of text still coming back. Oh, we got another one going back to 1942, New Voyager with Betty Davis and I can't even say Paul's last name here. A great love story. The ending always brings me to tears. And Betty Davis says, Jerry, don't let us ask for the moon while we have the stars. That's from Barb, the 847.
Is it Now Voyager?
Or now New Voyager.
Should be Now Voyager.
Now Voyager. Did I say New Voyager?
Well, I think you did.
Barb now wrote Voyager. Now Voyager, yeah, which now is Voyager. Correct. So that was my fault. I don't know if you've seen that.
Yeah, Betty Davis.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, and Claude Rains. So, yeah, you got me. You hooked me. Claude Rains.
A couple more texts for An Affair to Remember. What about Hitman? A great movie. This is from the 815, an old classic that I love. Also, The Quiet Man with John Wayne. So we got some throwbacks here.
Yeah, The Quiet Man is a big one. John Ford, you know, and I remember vividly when I was younger, back when VHS was a big thing and you would tape stuff off television. There was a movie I was taping, and I think it might have been Star Wars Empire Strikes Back. But the tail end of The Quiet Man is at the beginning of the tape. Like, you know, I set it too early. And so all you do when you put the tape in is you get the tracking error, and then the tracking would fix. And then John Wayne gets in a fight. And it lasts like 8 minutes long. And then, all right, we're in love and hug, kiss, and the movie ends. And then it's like,
boom,
yeah. Very, look, that is 100% a true story. So I want to make sure people know, like, The Quiet Man, though, is one of those John Ford films that I think people should see. It's a good love story. It is funny. And it's still, I think it's still funny today to sit and watch it. And it absolutely, and it takes place in Ireland. So, I mean, you know, it's one of those things where back then when they could make movies on location in other countries and show another part of the world and not just live on a back lot, I think that's a big reason why those movies succeeded. And to show a love story or, you know, a war film or anything like that to audiences, you know, that, you know, grew up in small towns or even, you know, a city like Chicago back then, I think it helped make cinema, you know, the transportive, like, art form that it is. And I think that The Quiet Man definitely falls in that category for me. And again, I've got a weird little story as to why that film, you know, I've seen it. I've definitely seen the end of it more times than the rest of it. But at the same time, that's one that I think anybody, if you haven't seen that, definitely get a hold of it.
Oh, the old taping things to VHS. So funny. Before we get to break really quickly, Blake, the 708 has a question for me, but I'm going to forward it right on to you. 708 asks, am I the only one that thinks Natural Born Killers is a love story?
No, it is a love story. Love stories can be unconventional. There's no, there's nothing that says that a love story has to be flowery and fun and cute or heart-wrenching and terrible. It can be wild and untamed and, in this case, campy, because that film is much campier than I think the writer. Okay, it was directed by Oliver Stone, but Quentin Tarantino wrote it. The film is quite a bit campier than the script's intentions played out, at least in Tarantino's mind, as he put it. It wasn't the film that I wrote. But I definitely would agree. It's a love story. It's an unconventional love story. It's a violent love story.
Yeah.
And it's sort of rooted in that troubled beginnings leads to a troubled path of destruction. But at the same time, you don't doubt these two characters and their feelings toward each other. It's a driving force of the narrative.
All right, Blake, we got to take a quick commercial break. We're going to continue on after this with more on Blake Stubbs and your favorite love stories in the movies. 312-981-7200. Got a lot more texts to get to. We got a few more from Blake as well coming up here on 720 WGN. Oh, Jess, you're going to break my heart. Great bumpin' song. Perfect for what we're talking about here. Heartbreak, love, in the movies, in a lot of movies, of course. Blake Stubbs joining us. And Blake, we got a lot to get to here in the next 9 minutes, so I'm going to go through a few of these texts and we can just respond quickly. But I got one from the 630 that I had forgotten, and it just immediately killed me. Castaway. So I think this is a movie with two distinct love stories. The clear one between Tom Hanks and his wife, played by Helen Hunt, and of course Tom Hanks and his volleyball. And both stories end terribly. I mean, both love stories are tragic. And the when he comes, spoiler alert for Castaway, the scene with Helen Hunt at the end is just, it moves me to tears every single time I see that. I think it's a very underrated movie and scene.
I would agree with you. I think that it's one of those where that's a very real response to a very harrowing story. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's the real, like,
yes. Response.
Like, when he comes home, I mean, in his mind, you know, that's what got him through it. That's what got him through the whole ordeal, was that he was going to come home and home would be there and everything would be fine. But obviously, life takes turns.
They had buried him. I mean, they had buried him.
Yeah. Yeah, and so you have this very If you want to say that, you know, like, oh, well, if a guy was stranded on an island, this, that, you know, if you want to pick apart, like, parts of the movie and say, no, the very end of the movie, I think, is the most real, natural, and it's both tragic and bittersweet. It's like all of these things rolled into one. And, you know, to commend the actors, they played it so grounded.
Yeah, and,
there
you
was
know...
no, you know...
You're just not mad at either character. They're both right. Like, it's one of those movies you just go, damn. You can't. There's nothing you can do.
Right. And I think that it renders you, the audience, in a way a bit helpless, just like the characters in the film. Because, you know, you're rooting for this guy throughout the whole film. And at the same time, you know, there is resolution for him. I don't want to say that there's not. But at the same time, yeah. And again, to talk about, like, you know, the volleyball thing I said, you know, love can be unconventional and everything. I always, you know, that was him trying to maintain some sense of drive. You know, he created something so that he could continue on and have a means of bouncing off his consciousness in sort of a verbal outward way so that he didn't isolate and lose his mind and then just die on that island. So, you know, when it's time for Wilson to disappear, it's time for Wilson to disappear.
Yeah.
It's all like the strokes of the story flow so well. And again, spoiler alert, yes, I apologize. But I think that film, yeah, I think it's underrated for that reason alone. I think it was a really ambitious film. I mean, you know, Tom Hanks, like, filmed the beginning of the film and then disappeared for like 9 months and then, you know, grew facial hair and all these other things. In fact, Robert Zemeckis made a whole movie. He made the movie, I believe, What Lies Beneath, in the time it took Tom Hanks to go from being,
yes,
you know, the guy that works FedEx to looking like the castaway, which is quite miraculous.
Yeah, it really, it really is.
I know that a whole movie was made while that was being made. Like, it's just, it's unreal. But at the same time, yeah, I think that's a very, for something miraculous, like someone being cast away on an island to then survive it and then come home, there is reality, I think, and grounded reality for that, those characters in the end.
Blake, I'm going to list a bunch of them. I'm going to list a bunch here because we're going to plow through a few of these. Maybe pick one of the next 10 that I'm about to read to talk about, but I want to get some text here. 630 says, Lost in Translation, An Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. We've got Brian Song, The Pride of the Yankees. Walk to Remember on Golden Pond, Forever Young with Mel Gibson. We've got Bonnie and Clyde and Thelma and Louise for love stories. Again, these are some unconventional ones. 815, best love story movie is Pretty Woman. Again, kind of sort of unconventional in ways. And I think that those are maybe the movies that sticks. And, oh, here's an interesting one. 6-year-old, can Hoosiers count? Since the very last line, as the camera zooms in on the picture of the state championship team hanging on the wall of the gym while the young boy is shooting baskets, the memory of Gene Hackman. Is that a memory of Gene Hackman saying, I love you guys? They bring up a good point. I think a lot of those movies, it's not necessarily about this rom-com love story. It's about these unconventional ones.
It is. It's not always black and white. It's not always, when you say a love story, it's not the same thing. I mean, like, you know, someone said Natural Born Killers, you know, when we're mentioning all of these other types of films, from WALL-E to Natural Born Killers, that's a pretty, pretty broad spectrum. But I don't disagree. I think that love is a very open concept. And I think that, you know, yeah, I would, for that alone, I would say that love is a key element. Love, passion, drive, you know, respect, pushing, you know, people to reach levels of excellence, to be winners and Hoosiers. I think that definitely counts. It's just not, when you say a love story, people usually think it's between two people. You know, it's this relationship. It doesn't have to just be that. You know, for me, I always, the one movie that I go to, because I haven't mentioned a romantic comedy yet, one that I go to and I want to just talk a little bit about is When Harry Met Sally, which I think is the definitive romantic comedy. If you want one that is good, that is funny, that, you know, and it was written by Nora Ephron, you know, who tragically passed in the last few years, but stars Billy Crystal and Meg Ryan. Carrie Fisher is also in the film, who also recently passed tragically. But the whole premise of the film is these two people meet when they're leaving college. And for years, they're just friends, you know, and they have their own relationships and lives to live, but they keep coming back to each other as friends. And then finally, they get together. And there's something to be said for the persistence of that friendship, that love that started out simply as friendship. And by the way, they didn't start out that way. I mean, they were polar opposites as far as people, but they grew. And in growing, they grew together. And I think that the spattering throughout the film, it's like this nice little garnish of, you know, these stories being told by these older couples that, you know, how they got together and how long they've been together and what their lives were like and what their lives were like before they got together, all of those things. That just helps, you know, ground the film in a reality that love doesn't come one way or another. It's not this ideal that everybody's told from a young age that you're going to meet someone and that's going to be it. Things just happen. And sometimes you find it. And I think when Harry Met Sally encapsulates that, which is sort of what we've been, I think, driving towards in this whole conversation about cinematic love stories, I think it encapsulates all of it. It's unconventional. It's funny. It's tear-jerking. It's all of it. And if you haven't seen that film and you've been waiting for somebody to recommend it to you, then this is me telling you.
Yeah,
Watch it because I think it's going to hit you some way. It's going
to
hit you.
All right, let's get to a phone call before we wrap things up. We're going up to Kenosha. Glenn, what's your love story that you can't get enough of?
Well, there's a lot of movies I can't get enough of, but what dreams become with Robin Williams?
Oh,
now I know this. It wasn't critically the best movie in the world. I loved the movie. I loved the visuals of it. It's not just the movie of a man, a love for a man for a woman, but for his family, who if you've seen the movie, you know how it is. And I just think it's a stunning movie to begin with. And he basically, they all die, but he's willing.
Well, I don't mean to laugh at that. It's just that's a good spoiler to put out there.
But he's willing to spend the rest of eternity with his wife in heaven or hell, wherever she is, than to be without her.
It's one I've got to add to my list. Hey, Glenn, we appreciate the phone call. We got to get the news here in just a few moments. Blake, any thoughts on What Dreams Become?
What Dreams May Come. Yes, okay. Definitely. It's one of those films that visually was a stunner. The film looked like a painting while with live actors. And I think it was a very transportive film. I think that the presence of Robin Williams' character, you know, doing whatever he could to be with his wife for eternity is something people want to connect with. They want to believe in that. That's a version of love that anyone can get behind. And just a moment to mention about how it wasn't too critically loved, I vividly recall, and I just looked it up, Roger Ebert gave it 3.5 stars and was a very big fan of that film. So it did get a little bit of critical love. I would say a lot of critical love where it matters. And Chicago's Own, very much a big fan. My hero loved it. And I remember seeing it and thinking, this is such an offbeat type film for Robin Williams to be in, because it's not funny guy Robin Williams. My dial wasn't turned to be ready for, you know, the really impactful Robin Williams,
right,
which you got in movies like Good Will Hunting. This falls in that category, and I think it's one of the more forgotten roles of his. So very good pick, especially to round out this segment.
Well, yeah, and we're gonna wrap it up with this last one, and we don't have to talk too much about it because I think most people have seen it. But we've talked about all these unconventional ones. Maybe the most conventional one, the one that we've all probably seen or fallen in love with, it's the most conventional of the ones we mentioned, Princess Bride, Blake.
Oh, well, that's definitely on my list. In fact, I think I've mentioned Princess Bride more times than any film and all the times I've been on WGN.
Yes.
So come on. It's a fairy tale from beginning to end. It's beautifully told. It's beautifully acted. Andre the Giant's in it. You can't go wrong. but at the same time, it's got swashbuckling, you know, sword fighting. It's got witches and wizards. It's got everything. And I think it's one of those where sometimes you just want a really good fairy tale. And The Princess Bride is that movie. It always will be that movie. It never fails to hit, and it always will. And it doesn't matter how old you are, it's going to connect with somebody. So, yes, The Princess Bride. I'm glad I got it in there. I'm glad I got to mention it because I always do.
Blake,
it is one of my favorites.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, Blake, we could have gone on for about 3 hours with this stuff, but we appreciate your time. You need to get some sleep, about, what, another hour and a half of it before you got to drive to Bloomington for speech. Be nice to the kids, okay?
I will do. And thanks for having me. This was a total pleasure. And I'm definitely going to look up The Enchanted Cottage. So thanks for the homework.
You got some homework too, Blake. All right. Have a good one. Thanks so much for joining us. And it's a little bit late for news. So unfortunately, sorry, Roger. We get into these conversations.
And I've been listening to all this stuff.
Do you have a favorite love story in the movies, Roger?
You know, it comes and goes. I'm not a real big love story
mm-hmm.
kind of person. I don't go out for those types of movies necessarily.
Right.
There are movies I like that turn out to be love stories right. in one way or another. The Way We Were.
Yes.
You forgot that one.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry, Roger. We forgot it.
You forgot it.
1973.
Hubble.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
West Side Story.
Of course.
Shakespeare in Love.
Yeah, it has the word love in it. I can't believe we forgot that one. There's plenty of them.
there's a handful. And I just saw another one, but it's not even a traditional love story. Not a man-woman, mm-hmm. but it's a family love mm-hmm. type of thing where a lot of barriers are broken down. And it's just out in theaters, and it's also on Amazon Prime at the same time. And I saw it last night, and it's a box full of Kleenex tearjerker.
Really? What is it?
It's called Please Stand By.
Okay.
It's awesome.
Okay.
If you get the chance to see it.
Please Stand By. Yeah. I will have to add that to the list, and I'll send it over to Blake for some extra homework as well. But it's 3:33, and it's news time. So we go up to the lovely man himself, the love man, Roger Badish.